Well, thanks, Tim, for the introduction, and good afternoon. My name is James Ford. I'm a professor in geography here at McGill. For the last decade or so, I've been working with Inuit populations in the Canadian North, looking at the various pathways to which climate change affects culture, livelihoods, and more recently, health. And also, just starting this year, I'm involved with a big five-year project looking at Indigenous health and climate change in remote regions, focusing on the Canadian North, on the Amazon in Peru, and also in Uganda as well. And in my presentation today, I'm going to be identifying some of the upstream factors, the main underlying factors which make Indigenous populations perhaps some of the most vulnerable people to the health effects of climate change globally. Well, if I start, I just want to reaffirm firstly that the climate is changing. We can expect to see changes in climate in the future. Even if we reduce our greenhouse gas emissions today, we're still going to see some kind of impacts, unfortunately. And these impacts will have implications for health. Impacts might be direct, for example, where we see changes in temperature and precipitation regimes affecting the incidence and prevalence of disease, things like malaria, for example. Or they may be indirect in nature, where we have more complex causal pathways involving changes in behavior, social changes, economic changes, which affect how people interact with a variety of health outcomes. Now, climate change is widely regarded to be one of the biggest threats to health in the 21st century. That's not the finding of Greenpeace or the David Suzuki Foundation. That's the finding of the Lancet Commission report, which in 2009 assessed the global implications of climate change for health. Now, these impacts will not affect everyone. There will be winners and there will be losers. At a global scale, this plays out between the global north and the global south. But also within nations, we can expect inequalities with climate change impacts playing out along existing health inequalities. Now, it's widely believed that Indigenous populations are likely to be highly vulnerable to the effects of climate change, especially the health impacts of climate change. That conclusion was made by both IPCC in 2007 and also the Lancet Commission report. But why are Indigenous peoples expected to be vulnerable to the health effects of climate change? Well, firstly, I want to note that there are actually quite few studies that have been conducted on climate change and Indigenous health. We just finished a review here at McGill looking at all the published studies, both in the peer-reviewed scholarship and also in the Gray scholarship. And we only found 38 articles published over the last two decades on climate change and Indigenous health. So we don't know, there's not much scholarship out there. What we can do is we can use existing knowledge on health outcomes and determinants of Indigenous health to really understand some of the upstream or the distal drivers of vulnerability of Indigenous populations. When we look at these, what we can conclude is that in many cases, especially in remote regions and frontier zones, we can expect Indigenous peoples to be highly sensitive to the health effects of climate change and also have limited adaptive capacity to manage, to prevent, and to cope with a changing climate. I'm going to focus on a few of the main factors responsible for this. The first of which is Indigenous livelihoods, which creates a number of unique sensitivities to climate change. And this stems from the dependence on natural resources which many Indigenous populations have. Whether it's in the Canadian Arctic, whether it's in the forests of Amazonia, livelihoods, culture, and diet are often strongly tied to the natural environment. For example, here in the Arctic, some pictures here, hunting is a very, very important activity. Hunting is important for people's livelihoods. It's what they do for a living. It's important for people's culture. The act of hunting has been an activity which Inuit have done for many, many generations. But more than that, it's important for people's diet. In communities across the Arctic, people rely upon the foods that are caught locally, be it seal, be it whale, be it caribou. These are extremely important in people's diet. Yet what we're seeing as the climate changes is that these natural resources are also changing fast. In the Arctic, we're seeing changing sea ice regimes. It's becoming more difficult for Inuit hunters to get out there and actually do the hunting activities. We're seeing changes in animal health. We're seeing changes in animal numbers, all of which have implications for people's diet. And what this means is that when we look at climate change and health, it's not just about disease. It's not just about the changes in the prevalence and incidence of things like malaria. It's also about food security. It's about water security. And it's also about mental health as well. Because for many Indigenous populations, they maintain a very strong cultural and spiritual connection to the land. and the cultural resources that it provides. As it changes, it can have quite profound mental health implications. Secondly, the structure of indigenous health systems also creates unique pathways through which climate change will play out and affect indigenous populations. Because on the one hand, wherever you are amongst indigenous populations, traditional approaches to health still remain quite important to varying degrees. This can range from the use of medicinal plants, it can involve consulting local elders and local spiritual leaders about living a healthy life, or it can involve traditional knowledge on how to engage in the environment, on behavior. In the case of the Arctic, how to use the sea ice environments safely and successfully for hunting activities. It's as the climate changes, it's having quite significant impacts on a number of these traditional approaches to health, be it the loss of medicinal plants as climates change, be it the fact that traditional knowledge systems in the Arctic are being stressed and strained by the fact that the sea ice is changing in ways that people don't quite understand, and therefore making it more dangerous for people to engage in traditional hunting activities. Again, these traditional approaches to health, they broaden the potential impacts that climate change can have. It's not just about disease, it's about mental health, it's about livelihoods, it's about culture. Western health systems are also important to many indigenous populations. Whether you're in the remote Arctic North or the wastes of Siberia, many indigenous populations still have access to some form of Western healthcare, be it through nursing stations, hospitals, doctors. This access has been important, and it's been credited with improved health outcomes amongst indigenous populations over the last few decades. But there are challenges, significant challenges remain. Even here in Canada, a developed nation with a very, very good public health system, amongst our Aboriginal populations, there are severe challenges to accessing these health systems, be they remoteness because of geography, be they a history of colonization through the medical system, be it a lack of providing health resources in the appropriate language or culture, a number of challenges have been noted. And we see this when we look at health indicators here in Canada. The average life expectancy for Inuit males is 66 years of age, about the same as India. The average for a Canadian male is about 77 or 78. We look at rates of tuberculosis, the classic disease of poverty. The highest rates of TB in the world are in Nunavut, Canada's Arctic territory. Very, very high rates of TB. And this has climate change implications. It makes people susceptible to climate change impacts. But it also constrains access to information, diagnosis, and treatment, which are essential if we're to manage the impacts that climate change will have. Thirdly, socioeconomic disadvantage. We've been hearing quite a lot about this during this conference. What we find is that when we look at indicators of socioeconomic disadvantage, it's often indigenous populations who have the worst indicators. I've already talked about how in Arctic Canada, health indicators are amongst some of the worst in the country. But also if we look at employment, average income, often disproportionately high burden of socioeconomic disadvantage amongst indigenous populations. And this links the vulnerability to climate change at two main levels. Firstly, at an individual or household level, poverty increases the risk of negative health outcomes via material conditions and associated behaviors. So for example, house overcrowding. House overcrowding is a chronic problem affecting Aboriginal communities here in North America. It's quite common in the Arctic, for example, for 13 people to live in a house built for four. And this is the Arctic. It's cold. That means people are spending most of their time indoors in these overcrowded conditions. It's one reason why we have very, very high rates of TB in the Arctic. And it also increases the risk of person-to-person transmission of communicable diseases, of gastrointestinal diseases, things which could become more prevalent with climate change as temperatures warm. Food insecurity. Again, chronic problem affecting many indigenous communities. USDA surveys of food insecurity amongst Inuit communities show prevalence anywhere between 55% of people being food insecure to as high as 80% of people being food insecure. People have difficulty meeting their basic nutritional needs. In absence of climate change, Why? Because of the cost of living in the Arctic in many remote communities, because of the lack of healthy store foods, lack of jobs, low incomes. And climate change is an additional stress. It's a stress acting on food systems already under significant stress. This creates severe challenges. And already in the Arctic, we're seeing people having to go without food, in some cases for days on end, because of changes in the access and the availability of traditional foods. And also untreated water usage as well, a major issue of poverty. Again, we've heard quite a bit about this morning. Now, these photos here, I think, really illustrate some of the challenges that indigenous populations face. One of the projects my team did over the last year was we worked with remote indigenous communities in Uganda with Batwa pygmy communities. And what we did is we engaged in photo voice, whereby we gave cameras to community members and we asked them to go off and take photographs of aspects of their daily life which affect their health. The aim was to get a baseline understanding of the determinants of health in these communities, to find out where climate change might come in, to find out some of the factors that make people vulnerable to climate change. This is one of the photos here. When kids sleep outside, they get mosquitoes, but we have no money to buy mosquito nets. In these communities, household income is well below the poverty level of $1.25 per day. In fact, many of these community members don't actually have access to cash resources. Therefore, investing in things like mosquito nets, which are widely believed to be an adaptation to climate change as malaria becomes more prevalent in some regions, these people just can't afford that kind of investment. We did the same kind of research needs assessment in the Amazon with communities in the Amazon basin of Peru. We found very, very similar findings with regards to poverty and socioeconomic disadvantage. For example, in these communities, just being able to buy utensils like pots like this were very, very difficult, making it very challenging for people to boil water, with the consequence that most people get water untreated directly from local water sources. In these communities, they're remote. There's no shops, there's no one selling bottled water, all the water comes from the stream. Now, going back a decade in this community where we worked, NGOs did build a well, but the well broke down about 5 years ago and there was no local expertise to fix it, so communities still source water from the local stream. Again, increases people's potential sensitivity to some of the impacts of climate change. Now, poverty as well acts at an institutional level as well. In many indigenous communities across the world, institutions responsible for health are under multiple stresses. Poverty, marginalization, socioeconomic disadvantage, these things make responding to climate change quite difficult. In this context, some people, such as Bjorn Lomborg, have argued that we should shift our attention away from climate change. We should focus on other things. But I think this is misplaced, because it's mostly a false dichotomy. Because climate change, in many cases, will likely exacerbate poverty. There's also co-benefits in policy response. Investing in adaptation and mitigation can have multiple benefits beyond climate change. It can address many of these underlying drivers. And finally, socioeconomic transformations. We've seen some of the most pronounced socioeconomic change in indigenous communities, indigenous regions, especially frontier zones where we're seeing rapid deforestation, such as here in the Peruvian Amazon, illegal deforestation. We're also seeing in this region as well, oil and gas exploration. This is opening up these regions, bringing in new people, immigrants from elsewhere, potentially introducing new diseases to which communities have no resistance. Deforestation is changing the habitat for various vectors, potentially increasing the susceptibility for the emergence of new diseases. Here in Uganda, this is the Batwa population we worked with. They were traditionally a hunting and gathering community, lived in the forests for hundreds and hundreds of years. Then in 1991, the Ugandan government decided it would evict this population from the forest to make way for a nature reserve, which then became part of Uganda's promotion of tourism-based growth. Now, this location, this eviction, really provides the context within which we have to understand Batwa health today. It's responsible for, you know, loss of culture, loss of livelihoods, and consequently, it reflects in health indicators. The average life expectancy at birth for Batwa is 28 years of age, very, very, very low. And also in the Arctic, we're seeing rapid resource development as well. This is the Meadowbank gold mine in Nunavut. It's a number of large mines that are being developed across the north. Now, from a climate change perspective, This raises concerns because of the importance of caribou populations in Inuit diet and Inuit hunting. Caribou, on the one hand, are being affected by climate change, but are also being affected by these large mining developments that are going on. Now, I must note that socioeconomic transformations have a number of potential benefits. You know, new jobs can help address poverty, improve transportation access, can give people access to local markets to develop economically, to access Western healthcare systems. But these benefits are unlikely to occur, especially in frontier zones in developing nations where there is a lack of land rights, where there's marginalization, where there's socio-political violence, and limited community engagement. There's also concerns as well, as we see these socio-economic transformations, that we will also see implications for societal structure and also traditional knowledge systems. That is, it will affect how people interact with various health outcomes of climate change, will affect their sensitivity, will also affect the ability of people to adapt. Social networks, social capital, traditional knowledge are all extremely important for indigenous peoples in adapting to climate change. But in many contexts, they're being undermined by socioeconomic transformations. So to conclude, just quickly, what I focused on here are some of the upstream determinants of vulnerability to climate change amongst indigenous populations, some of the key underlying drivers. And in many cases, these determinants, they are social. They're social determinants of health, which make indigenous populations vulnerable. And so while much of my talk has been quite depressing, many of the trends are going in the wrong way, these social determinants of health also offer the opportunity, offer entry points for adaptation interventions to strengthen health systems. Now, moving forward, when looking at indigenous health and climate change and trying to get sustainable interventions, we need to also have local case studies. There's been very, very few case studies looking at indigenous health and climate change, trying to find out ways in which we can promote adaptation. And that's really the aim of one of the new projects that we're just beginning just now. So hopefully in a few years' time, we'll be able to profile some of the potential entry points for adaptation. Thank you. Okay, well, I'd like to now welcome our next presenter. It's Alexandra Leshkinowski. Alex is a researcher in the Climate Change Vulnerability and Adaptation Research Group at McGill in the Department of Geography. She's also a graduate of McGill. She graduated last year. And she was also a fellow at the Institute for Health and Social Policy. And she's presenting today with Dr. Jody Hyman. Jody is the founding director of the Institute for Health and Social Policy, the World Global Data Center, and the Project on Global Working Families. An internationally renowned researcher on health and social policy, Dr. Hyman holds a Canada Research Chair in Health and Social Policy. Alex and Jody.